You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
In 2008, California filmmaker Leslie Iwerks made Downstream, a documentary about the health impacts of the tar sands on the health of the people of Fort Chipewyan and about the efforts of their local doctor, John O'Connor, to raise the alarm. The film was shortlisted for an Academy Award in the short documentary category. Leslie Iwerks went on to produce a feature-length documentary titled Dirty Oil, taking a comprehensive look at Alberta's tar sands. Dirty Oil showed last month at the Calgary Film Festival and played to sold-out audiences there. Leslie joins me this morning from L.A. to tell us more about her film. Hello, Leslie.
Hi, Jane.
How did you first get interested in the tar sands?
Well, the project came to me through Babelgum, Babelgum Networks, which is based out of the U.K., and their founder, Silvio Scaglia, was very interested in doing some projects on global warming issues, and they primarily acquire content, but this was their first original program that they wanted to actually make in-house and fund, and so they came to me and said they had seen my other film, Recycled Life, which was nominated for an Academy Award in 2007, and thought maybe I'd be interested in doing this. So I didn't know much about the Canadian oil sands, and being an American, I really woke up to the fact that the hard reality that we get the majority of our oil from Canada. And so they basically funded the project, and I flew up there and got a whole trip up to Fort McMurray and Fort Chipewyan, and did sort of a reconnaissance trip, and was pretty shocked by what I saw. I'm pretty surprised by the stories that people told me. So it was upon that initial trip that we embarked on a film.
Well, I must say that when I watched the film earlier this week, I was pretty shocked by the images, too. It's a very horrifying landscapes up there. Now, the film opens with a series of streeters asking Americans where they think their oil comes from, and everybody says the Middle East. Why did you want to start with that question?
Well, because I think it's probably the most obvious question that we needed to start the film out with, because, you know, the majority of Americans don't realize that the majority of our oil comes from Canada. So I just felt like that was the way that the audiences could all relate, you know, to that one big simple fact. And we did a poll across L.A. and also asked people in the Midwest when we were out there shooting, and everyone said somewhere in the Mideast. So it was interesting.
How much oil is Canada sending down to the U.S.?
They're shipping over 2 million barrels a day.
Whoa, that's a lot of oil.
Yeah.
And who is benefiting from this apart from U.S. consumers? Where's all the money going?
Well, the money is going all over. You know, it's getting shipped to China. China's a big consumer of this now. It's growing. But the U.S. is really the main one, and we are proposing even more pipelines coming down to the Midwest, including one that's on the Senate floor right now, the Keystone Pipeline by TransCanada. So that's getting a lot of heat right now because, you know, people are concerned about these increasing number of pipelines coming into the U.S. and the impacts that they could have if there was an environmental disaster or a leakage. You know, there's just, I think most people don't know how many pipelines are actually going into the U.S., and until one breaks or until something happens to one of those pipelines, we will have a pretty big environmental disaster. So usually you don't know about these things until you have a disaster, so that's why there's a lot of controversy about it right now.
Now, one of the most difficult parts of the film that I found to watch is when you're talking with elders in Fort McKay about what's happened to their way of life. Can you describe the changes that they've gone through in the last 30 or 40 years?
Well, the people of Fort McKay, which is just an Aboriginal community just north of Fort McMurray, they've lived off the land for generation after generation. And when I spoke to the elders there and the chief of Fort McKay, you know, they speak of fishing in the Athabasca River and hunting moose, and just living off the land and this appreciation for the land all these years, and you know, their kids grew up on the land, and their, you know, their kids grew up on the land. So now, over the last, you know, really like 20 to 30 years, they've really seen a huge impact on their area. And although they are making money, you know, subsidiary money from the oil sands, many say they wouldn't trade any of that money for having their land back. And when you go to this little area, which was once just a, the, you know, part of this huge boreal forest, now it's an island surrounded by oil sands, you know, mining activity and toxic tailings ponds and gates and fences up everywhere. They can't get through places. They can't go out hunting or fishing. They won't even touch the Athabasca River anymore. And they're also dealing with, you know, the byproducts of the oil sands refining, which is hydrogen sulfide, which is a chemical compound that has a colorless sort of toxic foul odor of rotten eggs, and they are constantly saying that they walk out of their homes and they're smelling that almost on a daily basis. So, you know, it's just it's a pretty sad state to see how your livelihood can and your way of life can change so dramatically, so quickly.
Well, you talked to a woman up there who's had a cabin, a trapline cabin in her family for generations, and it's planned for demolition now because the company has a lease to develop there.
Right, yeah. So, you know, they're seeing their homes go away and they're getting bought out left and right. And, you know, it's the byproduct of big oil. So a lot of people say, well, why don't they just pick up and move? Well, that's just not that easy and not that respectful for people that were there long before the oil sands mining operators were.
Now, you ask a question of an elder there which really struck me. You said, what do you miss most? And that person thinks for quite a while and then just says everything.
Yeah, yeah, that was probably the most powerful moment for me as a filmmaker to have asked that question and then heard her reaction. And, you know, I had the opportunity to spend some nice times and conversations with so many people up there that, you know, these people are so wonderful and so great. And, you know, to feel their sadness over this, it was very compelling, and I just really felt, you know, honored to have been able to tell the story, but compelled to tell the stories.
What environmental impacts are the tar sands having outside of the immediate local area? What more global impacts?
Yeah, I mean, it's the global impact. You know, it's Canada's fastest growing emitter of greenhouse gases, and it accounts for about 40 million tons of CO2 emissions per year. Environment Canada will say it makes up about 5% of the Canada's total greenhouse gas emissions, or 0.1% of global greenhouse gas emissions. But environmentalists will say the opposite, that it's, you know, it's much greater than that, and it's increasing every year. And there's just a lot of backlash against the environmental protocols up there in Alberta. And so it's a very fiery controversy, depending on who you speak with. So it's tough because new statistics are coming out almost weekly about, you know, on one side of the fence or the other. But it is a concern, and it's more emissions than you would get from coal as well. And so, you know, just from an environmental point of view, this is something to be very concerned about.
Now, Canadian journalist Andrew Nikiforuk is a major opponent of the tar sands, and he's featured throughout the film. And at one point he says that the destruction being caused by the tar sands is in response to popular demand, and he and the rest of us, by extension, are personally responsible. What was your reaction to that statement of his?
Well, I thought it was a strong statement, and I thought he was absolutely right. You know, we are all responsible for how we consume oil, and, you know, we in the U.S. are the number one consumers of this Canadian oil. Two-thirds of that oil is being shipped to the U.S., so one-third of it remains there in Canada, and we use more, you know, we're growing in our oil consumption, whereas Canada is actually staying somewhat the same and not increasing their oil consumption. So I just feel, as an American, you know, the Americans need to know about this and say, what can we do to curb our oil addiction and sort of turn the tide a bit and look towards greener ways of consuming oil products. And, you know, obviously, it's easier said than done. You know, you still need plastic. You know, there's a lot of things that are made of oil that we can't really get around. But, you know, cars and other major means of transportation, you know, we can look at the simple things that we can do in life and try to limit that. And so that's what Andrew Kafoor talked about. You know, it's just is, let's take a look at our own carbon footprint on a daily basis and see what we can do. It's like going on a diet.
Now, your film showed in Calgary. It got a tremendous amount of popular support. It sold out, but it's also had a lot of negative press in Alberta after the premier complained about the funding that you got from Alberta Multimedia Development Fund. He's saying that $55,000 of Alberta money went into making the film, and it's one-sided. Did you approach industry to get their point of view?
Oh, yeah, we did. Well, we interviewed CAP, you know, the Canadian Association of Petroleum Producers, and we interviewed the Minister of Energy, Mel Knight, and we went out to other ministers and heads of the oil companies, but a lot of people declined our interviews or didn't respond at all. So, you know, I don't go into a project going in with a one-sided approach at all. In fact, I went into this sort of wanting to disprove it, to say this can't really be true, you know. But, you know, the truth rises to the surface on these projects, and I really go in as objective as possible. And then when you interview a cross-section of, say, 50 people, and everyone's sort of starting to say the same things that are very concerning, then that sort of becomes your storyline, right? So, you know, I just think that it's important to watch the film and to create a debate around it, and if it needs to get disproved, disprove it. But the reality is this is the truth that we found.
Well, thank you so much, and I have to say I really enjoyed the film. I thought it was extremely powerful, and I appreciate the fact that it can be viewed online, and I appreciate you taking the time this morning to tell us about it.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
I've been speaking with director Leslie Iwerks. Her film Dirty Oil showed at the Calgary Film Festival last month, and you can watch the film on babelgum.com, and I'll just spell that for you. It's a Babel like the Tower of Babel, B-A-B-E-L, gum.com, and you can just go to the site and search on Dirty Oil, and you'll find it there in a bunch of individual segments.